Hello, hello, hello. Hello, Georgians. Hello, global citizens. And hello, concerned Americans. My name is Varun Kadathala, and I'm the current co-host of the Politician Podcast, which myself and my high school best friend, Damian Galvin, created in June of this year to talk about issues that interest us, issues that disgust us, and issues that America needs to know about. In other words, myself and Damian created this podcast to deconstruct public policy issues of the past and the present and create a more equitable future for all of us. We have a very, very special episode queued up for you guys, but before we play this episode, we're going to give a special thank you to our sponsor, Patreon, and our wonderful team here at Politician, which includes high school juniors Jada Pilling, Yi Shen, and Julia Hartman. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode, and we hope that you enjoy. See you in the episode.
And we're rolling. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Politician. My name is Damian Galvin, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Varun.
Hello, everybody. My name is Varun Kadathala. I'm the co-host of the Politician Podcast, which myself and Damian host every Monday and Friday to kind of inform you guys about issues that deserve your importance in today's political landscape. Now, we have a very exciting discussion today, especially considering that we haven't been on the podcast since, I guess, it was last Monday, Damian. Last Friday it was. And then the same day that we posted the episode, we had President Donald J. Trump. I think it was that day, but he got the coronavirus. Was that Friday or was that Thursday?
I think that was Thursday, that he came down with coronavirus Thursday. The public was informed about 9 p.m. that he was being tested on Wednesday. It wasn't confirmed that he had coronavirus till about 1 in the morning or 12 in the morning on Thursday.
Well, you're right, because I remember, and I backtracked myself, because I was up at like 12 o'clock studying, and I go on Twitter, and I'm like, what can I post for Politician about the elections? And I see Trump. And he's like, I'm positive for COVID-19, me and the FLOTUS. And I'm like, Jesus, am I reading this right? And then I see it again, and I'm like, damn, man, this is absolutely insane. I mean, 1 o'clock at night, and I get this news. And it is absolutely insane. A school night is what I remember. So now I remember what I was thinking at that time. So I want to ask you, Damian, I mean, it's absolutely kind of not really surprising. I want to talk about this later, but it was definitely something that mattered. It was had a big impact on the whole week, and it will have a big impact come November 3rd. What were you doing when Trump was diagnosed with COVID-19? I want to ask you that question.
Watching CNN. I was watching CNN when Trump was diagnosed with COVID-19. I went upstairs. I don't exactly remember what I had finished doing. I was probably more than likely doing some schoolwork, and I go upstairs, and I was probably like on my phone. We have, you know, we have the news on most of the time. So I was probably on my phone, sitting on my couch, and CNN was playing in the background. And then, you know, I always put down my phone when I hear something interesting or something that really interests me, because news does tend to repeat itself. But, you know, something that doesn't repeat itself until, you know, a Thursday or around 12 in the morning was the president having coronavirus. So, So that definitely caught my attention. I put my phone down. I started listening to the fact that the president of the United States and the first lady had coronavirus. And the developments with the story were absolutely crazy. And the developments even today, Monday, October 5th, are insane, but we'll get to those in a little bit. What were you doing though?
I mean, like I talked about, I was on Twitter at like 1 a.m. Yeah. I don't know why I was. I forget why I was. But I go on, and the first thing I see is real Donald Trump posting about how him and the FLOTUS have COVID-19. And I was like, am I reading this right? Like, am I having a nightmare? Or am I sick? And I read it, and I'm like, this really just happened. And I go downstairs, and I yell. I'm like, Dad, the president has COVID-19. And he gets all worked up. He watches the TV. He turns it all on. And I'm like, Dad, why are you so surprised? I'm like, you know what I'm surprised about? I'm surprised that he got it now and not earlier, because he's been outside in these rallies for so long. I'm like, Dad, the only point at which I'm surprised is because he hasn't got this like a couple of months ago. It's the first time that he actually contracted the virus. So it is more of a point of, like I said, a point of an impact upon this election than it is a surprise for me. And my dad was like, yeah, you know, Vern, you're right, because the president, as we all know, has been downplaying this virus and continues to downplay this virus to the American people. I want to talk about, let's backtrack here, because a lot of things have happened since then. Like you said, Damian, a lot of developments have happened with the whole White House getting the virus. A lot of people have got the virus outside of Trump. And I want to talk about what happened before we got the diagnosis of President Trump getting the virus. So, you know, we had one of his top aides getting the virus, Hopix. And they knew about that, right? And they had Trump. The peculiar thing is, even after Hopix tested positive for the coronavirus, Trump knowingly went to a campaign fundraiser with his, you know, his wealthy friends. So I want to ask you, Damien, what did you think about President Trump's choice to go to a fundraiser and knowingly put 100 people in harm's way, even though he knew his top eight Hopix had the coronavirus? And beyond that, I mean, I don't know if this is absolutely true, but it's been heavily reported and reported that he had symptoms going into that event. There was signs of him coughing, and the reports are that at least 100 people directly interacted with President Trump at the event, all wealthy folks with no masks on. We have seen the president coerce people into not wearing masks. We'll talk about that later. But what do you think the implications of this are, and how completely idiotic is that, Damien? Because you know it is. I know it is. The American people know it is.
I think, as opposed to being idiotic, it attests to what this president has reiterated throughout his entire presidency, and that is that, again, this was a fundraising event, right? So he doesn't he doesn't care about the lives of those there. He cares about the fact that he's raising money for his reelection bid. And I only speak negatively on the president today because he said that he feels better than he's felt 20 years ago. So, you know, if he had been feeling bad, I'd cut him some slack. But, you know, he's saying that the virus is nothing to worry about, so I'm not worried about him. But beyond that point, it attests to the way that he's dealt with the coronavirus the whole time. It almost reminds me of a story. Now, the validity of this story I can't attest to, but it reminds me of a person came up to Donald Trump and he said, "Have you been tested?" He Donald Trump backs away from the person. "Have you been tested?"
Right.
And what that showed was that Donald Trump was not worried about that person getting close to him because maybe he had coronavirus. That showed that Donald Trump was worried about him getting the virus. And Donald Trump has only done, the president of the United States has only done what suits his best interest. Again, it just shows that, just one more time, it cements it. And this is going to be of great concern for his reelection bid.
Right.
It's going to be of great concern to national security moving forward. We have President Donald J. Trump leaving the Walter Reed Medical Facility in about 15 minutes. It is currently 6:15 when we are recording this. So he is reported to be leaving by his own account in about 15 minutes back to the White House. What can happen there? Because I have my own opinions on what can happen. If the president returns to the White House, first of all, what that means, what's the immediate impact of that? And second of all, what happens in a worst case scenario? But I'd like to gauge your perspective first.
So before we hit the point of 6:30, I want to actually talk about that exactly as 6:30 hits, or a little bit earlier. But I want to talk about something before that, and that's the history of what exactly went down. Because I know we're talking about things that are very broad. And I want to give our viewers kind of some perspective on what actually happened after this fundraiser, right? So I started the fundraiser. And then we have the presidential debate. That's before the fundraiser, but regardless. The point is that Hope Hicks, I believe she had her diagnosis before that presidential debate, and President Trump comes later than expected. And so he doesn't get his test, right? He's late for his test. Right off the bat. Beyond that, Melania and a bunch of the Trump folks, the Trump family and the Trump fans on the left side of the room don't have masks on. And that's absolutely a sight to see, because I was watching before the debate, right? And they're all hugging. It's almost like the nomination of Amy Coney Barrett. They're all hugging. They're all shaking hands. And the funny thing is, they were all, putting hand sanitizer on while doing it all, which kind of defeats the purpose. But that's beyond the point. The point is that they were all talking without masks on. And this includes Ivanka Trump, Donald J. Trump, Donald Trump Jr., Eric Trump, and Melania Trump, who had presumably may have had the virus at that time, because the problem is that we don't know when the president was last tested negative for the virus. So we have no idea if he had the virus during the debate, right? So that's a problem. Mm-hmm. And then after Hopix and after the campaign fundraiser, we had the president come out and say he's getting tested for the virus. He tests positive. And he posted on social media. And so a lot of people are reacting to this. And then we see people like Chris Christie, people like Mike Lee, people like most recently, obviously Kellyanne Conway, but Kaylee McKinnon, he tested positive for this virus. And that's the real history behind this event. I'm going to pull up a list for you, but those are the main folks involved in this. And a lot of them have attended maskless events in the past. Mm-hmm. Now, on to your point about kind of the implications of what this could mean, him coming out of the hospital. I cannot answer that question for you, Damien, and neither can any sensible American citizen. You know why? It's because his doctors have not given enough information, nearly enough information, about the president's stance and his current status. All we've got is their muddled words, muddled accounts, and his own tweets about how he's feeling better than he was 20 years ago, as you said. So it's a very muddled account. And also, I've been listening to these conversations as I'm doing my homework. 1.5, 2-hour discussions about the president's status. And they're not giving much substance. The problem is that when they're asked about when last the president tested negative for the virus, which can really give us some insight on whether he was positive during the debate itself, they don't know. They won't tell us. And when they ask about, how is the president doing, they give us very broad comments. They're like, he may still have the virus. He may not still have the virus. He's going in. He's going to be quarantined, things like that. So it's extremely broad comments. And I don't know about you, Damien. I think the American people deserve more, because if we got more, we could have this conversation today about more details with more substance. So I think beyond kind of my own stance, I want to have the facts. I really want to have the facts, but it makes it extremely hard when the president's own physicians aren't giving us those facts.
Yeah, it does make it extremely difficult. And, going back to the tweets, how unpresidential, right, that this is a moment of extreme national security, or the breach, lack thereof, rather, of maybe potential national security ramifications. And the United States learn, or the people of the United States learn about it through a tweet. It wasn't an address. This is something that's very serious. And the fact that it was, brought to the attention of the people via Twitter, it's understated, right? We've gotten used to it at this point, but it's understated. It's almost as if I always think back to 9/11, right? 9/11 happens. Bush comes on, every TV in the United States. And he talks about, which is transcended. He talks about the evil that just took place. And he talks about how the American resolve will not fail. I have to wonder, had 9/11 happened and Trump was president, would we just have heard his remarks through a tweet? And it may sound a little crazy, but to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if we had heard his remarks towards one of the greatest tragedies in American history, at least since Pearl Harbor at that time, through a tweet, right? That's so odd to think. So it can't be understated how unpresidential it is to just tweet about this. But going back to the fact that he's about to be released from Walter Reed Medical Center, I think that obviously we do not know nearly enough about the president's medical condition to comment even on hypotheticals. But hypotheticals is all we can really run on, right? Hypothetically speaking, it, with regard to what I'm going to say in a couple seconds, but I've heard that the president might be feeling this well because of the fact that he's on so many steroids. The fact that once he leaves Walter Reed Medical Center, his condition, and this is coming not from, news anchors, whether they be on the left or on the right, this is coming from doctors, medical doctors, that his condition can deteriorate rather quickly within the next couple of days. And we actually see the most inflammation in the days to come. So it's very odd that he's being released from Walter Reed Medical Center. It's very odd for multiple reasons. First of all, for the fact that he's still receiving a treatment that is typically given through IV. And he's being released, so we have to assume that he's going to get that IV treatment at the White House. But he is, again, it goes back to this joyride that he took. He's putting the pilot at risk of Marine One. He's putting the pilot of Marine One at risk once again, just like he put the Secret Service agents yesterday at risk. He's almost going for joyrides at this point. And then what happens if he has to go back to Walter Reed Medical Facility, to the Walter Reed Medical Facility? Imagine if the president, after saying that he feels better than he did 20 years ago, if you know what happens with a typical COVID-19 patient, especially at his age and with his health conditions, happens to him, and he starts having inflammation, and his condition worsens. Obviously, God forbid, right? We want the best for the president of the United States.
Absolutely.
But what happens then? What happens if he has to return? What does that show the American people? What does that mean for his candidacy, for his reelection bid?
Right. And I'm gonna draw back to my point, which I obviously say time and time again to my friends. Obviously, we do not wish death upon the president. We do not wish death. Because if we say it is what it is, if we say, you know, this is a virus that affects virtually nobody, in the light of him getting the virus, it makes us no better than he is. We have to be the better person in this standpoint. So I would tell the American people, if the president does, I tweeted this a couple of days ago, if the president does fall ill, incapacitated because of this virus, and he probably won't as of now, but if he does, in that circumstance, I compel you not to say it is what it is, but to show respect, because we have to be the better person. We have to be that. And honestly, at this point, I mean, when you're talking about 9/11, it brought a really sentimental movement into my heart, because I know exactly what happened on that day, studying that day, studying for my history classes, for my own personal edification. The thing is that George W. Bush's speech on that day was absolutely the most presidential, the most sentimental, the most American thing that a president could have done. This president hasn't done that, even though the amount of people who died in 9/11 die almost every single day because of this virus. And that is saddening. That's extremely saddening. I
Wow.
mean, you talk about 9/11, these people are dying every single day. This president hasn't come out one time in the past couple of months since this virus came out, 7 months. He hasn't come out and made that kind of statement, which hurts. What he has said is that this virus affects virtually nobody. That's like saying the 9/11 planes affected virtually nobody. No, it affects families. It affects people. It affects Americans. That's what he has to be saying. And that's what I expect from a president of the United States of America. Now, when you're talking about who he is okay with infecting, I mean, that fundraiser was held with wealthy folks. He didn't have a mask on, and presumably, as per his own physician's account, he tested positive before that fundraiser. So he came into that fundraiser with no mask on, affecting before it the staff on his airplane as he got there. And then he came into there, affected the wealthy people in the place. I mean, I thought he was affecting the poor people without proper medical supplies, proper access to healthcare. These are completely Donald Trump's people, they're his friends. They're the rich people that he wants money from. So why are you willingly infecting these people? I mean, these are your supporters. This is isn't that counterproductive? It's absolutely hard to wrap my head around. Now, I mean, when you're talking about the Trump story, of him telling the reporter, not the reporter, the citizen, have you been tested? And told him to walk back. Biden mentioned this because it shows that the president doesn't care about the American people, but only cares about his own reelection chances. And if that means sacrificing the American people, so be it. And we've seen that, Damien, time and time again, even now, because now one of his top campaign advisors has said that we'll resume in-person events very soon, as per the account on his website, on Trump's website. I get emails from them. I won't tell y'all why. It is an absolutely embarrassing story. But anyways, I get emails from them, and I got an email today saying that they will resume in-person events after the VP debate. But before that, they have virtual events. Now, two things. Number one, the fact that President Trump made fun of Biden time and time again for having virtual events, saying that nobody could attend his events, nobody wanted to attend his events, is so ironic, given that he has to do the exact same thing now, right?
Yeah.
Now, before the VP debate, he has to have virtual events. And after this, it's in person, back to these big rallies, back to these big events, super spreader events. It is hard, once again, to wrap my mind around, because his campaign, you know, shows no compassion to the American people. And, you know, on the note of his campaign, I want to talk about one thing. I want to get your perspective on this. President Trump's communications director went on Fox News, I think this morning or yesterday morning, and talked about how the president now has firsthand experience of the virus. And that gives him an advantage over, you know, Vice President Joe Biden, former Vice President Joe Biden, because he doesn't have firsthand experience. What do you think about her saying that this morning? And if that's even remotely factual?
You can have firsthand experience of whatever, but what does it matter if you interpret that experience wrong? Right? She said it this morning and this afternoon. The President of the United States tweets, "Do not let coronavirus paralyze you. We have to keep living our lives." What does that say? What does that show? How can you keep living your lives after you lost a loved one? How does that feel, right? Sitting at the dinner table and seeing an empty seat. Obviously, you don't have to worry about it. You got flown to the Walter Reed to the best medical facility, arguably the best medical facility in the entire United States, where you have your own floor dedicated to you, on your own helicopter dedicated to you, from your own house, right, that had medical equipment there dedicated to you. All the while, this is being paid for by taxpayers while you fail to pay taxes, right? He couldn't even pay for the gas. The $750 that he paid didn't even pay for the gas trip to Walter Reed and back from the helicopter. So what does this say, right? What does this say about the President of the United States?
You know what it says?
What does
it says say? That he doesn't have the true experience of what the virus
exactly
is. It refutes her claim.
Exactly.
Because he doesn't have that experience. He has the best doctors in the world, has the best medical facilities. He's the President of the United States of America. He doesn't empathize with the American people and not having the medical facilities, because no matter what, he has an amazing chance at beating this virus. He does. He presumably beat it. I mean, this is because of his medical facilities, access to cocktail drugs, experimental drugs that American people don't have access to.
Yep.
It's absolutely unprecedented. Yep. So for her saying that, it's not
yeah.
right.
Yeah. So does he also have the experience of those having to pay
pay taxes.
No, well, I was going to say pay the tens of thousands of dollars that it takes to go to the hospital because of coronavirus, right? Does he have to pay for his own ventilator? Obviously he didn't. We paid for it, right? We paid for it in the taxes that we pay, in the taxes that for us, our parents pay. So what does that show, right? What does that show? He can't even relate to having to pay for the vent or for the oxygen that he was put on, or that experimental cocktail that only 10 Americans outside of trials have gotten, right? Does he have the experience of the 20 million people that he left uninsured? Does he have the experience of the millions that he's going to leave uninsured? Does he repeal the Affordable Care Act? And I would not only argue, but I would factually say that no, he does not. He does not have the experience of the coronavirus. I was talking to my dad, and I said, "You can't say that he has the experience of the coronavirus. That's like me saying that I know what it is it's just such an odd claim. He had the presidential experience of the coronavirus, not the common folk experience. That's not going to help him. That's not going to help him anywhere." I saw a funny tweet though, and I'll just throw this in there to kind of settle the mood. Donald Trump always said, I like soldiers that weren't captured. Someone tweeted out, "I like presidents that didn't get COVID-19. And I just thought that it was, again, you know, people have been using Donald Trump's words. We even said it is what it is. It was in response to Chris Christie, and then later tweeted out, you know, "Shall the president have to, shall the president's condition deteriorate to one where the transition of power would have to be invoked, the 25th Amendment would have to be invoked," that we shouldn't say things like that. And I agree. We should not say things like that. Shall it result in, or shall such a, I guess, dramatic situation unfold, and we really shouldn't. But right now, I mean, the president himself said it. He feels better than he's felt in 20 years. So I think that Joe Biden, I don't know if you have more information on this, but I think that he's relaunching all his negative ads on the president.
Yeah, which I thought should have been done much, much, much earlier, to be honest
I
with you.
really, why do you think that?
I never thought Joe Biden should stop posting negative ads on the president,
Wow.
because this president doesn't deserve that kind of respect. He doesn't. I mean, he got the virus. It wasn't because it was a natural circumstance, which Republicans play it as. It wasn't. It was a direct consequence of his own ignorance. So why not use that ignorance to your advantage? It is not something that it's not like Ruth Bader Ginsburg passing away. That's a natural, tragedy. This was something the president did to himself by not following the most simple precaution for this virus, by letting this virus get to him. And moreover, this president impacted so many White House officials, so many of those close to him. We don't even know how many people he impacted with the whole the
Rose
fundraiser.
Garden
So
and the Rose
Rose
Garden.
Garden and the fundraiser. So both of these things are incredibly super spreader events. We have no contact tracing because this guy went around maskless to so many people, didn't tell them about Hope Hicks's positive test, about his own test. And it is just, I don't understand why Joe Biden is not using this to his advantage. I mean, I respect him for it. I respect him for it. But if I was in his position, I would be using his ignorance to my advantage. Of course, get well soon. But don't stop attacking him because this election's in 30 days. I don't care if he gets the virus right now. I'm not going to stop playing ads, especially when on the other end, I'm seeing Trump ads against Joe Biden continually running. Does he deserve that kind of respect? It is not about, the president got the virus. Yes. And I'm going to stick by it by saying that he infected so many Americans and hasn't stood up for himself. So I don't think he deserves the chance to not get negative ads posted on him. Because Joe Biden cannot take this lightly. Hillary Clinton took this lightly. Joe Biden cannot do that. And that's what I'm going to stick by. He has to keep pushing ads. And now, well, Joe Biden's having in-person knock-on-door events. He's back to doing that. It's a 360-degree turnaround from his original standpoint. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, definitely. I'd say that it is in Joe Biden's political favor to pull those ads. I'd say that it's a good, obviously Joe Biden would do it because he's Joe Biden. But beyond that, it helps his campaign in pulling the ads. But what I did not like was what you mentioned, the fact that Donald Trump kept running negative ads on Joe Biden. I didn't like that because the reason that Joe Biden pulled his ad was pulled his ads, negative ads on Donald Trump, was because of the fact that he wanted to unify the nation, and he wanted to not, not create that divide between parties. He wanted to unify the nation. But then when you see the president not wanting to do that, it's like, come on, like I pulled my ads. Let's both take a break here, with that respect from campaigning. But it even attests to the fact that I don't think Donald Trump is good right now. I really don't. I think Donald Trump is impatient. I think that he wants to get out of Walter Reed Medical Facility, and he wants to do what he did yesterday, and he wants to keep driving around in little joy rides, and he wants to get back to campaigning because he knows that his potential loss is within 30 days, as you said, right? The election is within 30 days, and he's
And he's
scared.
on the losing side of it.
He
He
is on the
is.
losing
Why
side
would
of
he be
it.
scared?
Yep. So he wants to get back to campaigning as soon as possible, which is why I believe that he left the Walter Reed Medical Facility. Obviously, I am no doctor, but I wouldn't be surprised if he left this under the best or if he left the Walter Reed Medical Facility under the best wishes or against the best wishes of the doctors there taking care of him.
I mean, to your point, his physician did say that it was okay for him to leave Walter Reed, and get some treatment from his White House officials, or that he'll have paramedics there to treat him. But honestly, we've heard so many conflicting accounts. I mean, you had Mark Meadows, his chief of staff, come out and say, well, Donald Trump hasn't been doing so good over the past couple of days. He's been suffering, but now he's doing better. And then his own physician come out and say the exact opposite. So you've heard multiple accounts on this issue. His physician has been extremely optimistic. But I cannot trust the man. because he hasn't released information on his scans of his lungs, hasn't released information on when he last tested positive, last tested negative. And that doesn't make me trust him. Now, I want to talk about the whole situation with Donald Trump and the joyride, as you said, around Walter Reed to his supporters. But I want to talk about that after our little ad break here. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes here.
And we're back from our ad break.
All right, guys, we're back from our ad break. Now, for any of our new listeners who are chiming in now, probably from a break or just joining us now, we talked about President Trump and how his campaign and Biden's campaign have respectively handled this virus, his diagnosis and the situation on both campaigns, more about who's infected by the virus and what this means for the elections come November 3rd. And we're just going to talk more about how President Trump had a joyride. Yesterday, I believe, Damian, was when he had this joyride. So he was, first of all, I want to talk about something that I think is extremely relevant to the situation which is going on right now. First of all, a tweet that I saw from Morgan Freeman 58 seconds ago during our break. The man is very, very sick. Now, I saw this tweet, right? The man is very, very sick. And I took it literally. Then I thought about it. And I was like, this man is more sick mentally than he is physically. And I believe that to be true to today. Wow. I mean, it is more evident than ever.
Wow.
And I want to mention something that really substantiates this, because I mean, I was looking online, I was looking at how Secret Service agents have been treated over the years, their role in the presidency and in safeguarding the presidency. And we talk about presidents and Secret Service. There was one time I heard this account. There was an agent outside of the Oval Office in the shivering cold, and JFK asked him, why don't you come inside? And he said he couldn't. And JFK came outside, brought two cups of hot chocolate, and they both drank it. And that Secret Service agent, talked about it later, and he said, that's the kind of president I've been serving. That's the kind of president I've been serving. This president, well, we'll talk about that later, and we'll talk about it right now. This president went out in a joyride, and Damian told me about this before I even knew about it, but he went out riding with the Secret Service agents in a car on a joyride outside of Walter Reed for, I think, 5 or 6 minutes, waving to his supporters, who were sitting outside and waving the Trump flags or banners in support of the president. And this may seem like a patriotic gesture in the beginning, before you consider the fact that he risked his own Secret Service agents who've put their lives on the line to protect the president and not be affected by him. Their role is not to protect themselves from the president. Their role is to protect the president from other people, right? And at this point, they're having to protect themselves against this president who's literally positive for the virus, sitting in the back of the vehicle, has a mask on, but the mask won't do enough because, first of all, the car they're in is bulletproof, extremely, extremely resilient. And that means that the air circulated within it stays within the car, right? Mm-hmm. It's a very, very safe, precautionary car. So the problem is that the risk of having the virus transmitted in this car is extremely high. And the doctors, Walter Reed, some of them came on the record and said, you know what? This is an extremely dangerous situation. It is ignorant. It is dumb. Obviously not his physician, but other doctors in the same facility said the exact same thing, knowing what they're talking about and not hiding from the fact. And we saw, just to give some clarity for our viewers, both Secret Service agents in the car, they were wearing PPE, full face gowns, face shields, face masks, and that's how it went down. And he received extreme criticism for putting the lives of his own agents on the line. Once again, people who were supposed to protect him having to protect themselves against him. What do you think about this, Damian? What does it mean for the election, and what does it mean for voters?
I have to relate this to 2016. In 2016, we had the Access Hollywood tapes come out, right, where the president of the United States made his remarks about made open remarks about sexually harassing or sexually assaulting women, both. And we listened to those tapes and we thought, man, that has to be the end of it. He has to lose after this. On Tuesday, the president made or failed to make remarks condemning condoning white supremacy. And then a couple days later, the president contracts coronavirus. After he failed to condone, sorry, white supremacy.
Condemn, condemn. Condone
Yes.
means accept, yeah.
Which after he failed to say white supremacy is a bad thing. Let's put it into simple terms, layman's terms, right? After he failed to say no, don't be racist, he then got coronavirus. After he made fun of Joe Biden for wearing a mask, he then was caught in the back of his vehicle risking two Secret Service agents. I don't know what it means. I can't tell you what it means. I would tell you that had Joe Biden had the Access Hollywood tape come out on him, that it would be the end of his candidacy. I don't know with Donald Trump anymore. The most powerful quote that I can take from the president of the United States is I could kill a man in Times Square and people wouldn't care, right? So I don't know what it means. I don't know what it means for the election. But I was having a conversation again with my dad, and after the remarks about white supremacy were made, he said, if another thing happens within the next 2 weeks, it'd be very unrealistic to see Donald Trump win. And I thought about it. I said, God damn. Within the past month, the president's taxes
Yeah, man.
were shown, right? Alleged tax returns were shown that showed that he paid $750 within within the year that he was elected and within his first year as president, that he failed to pay taxes 10 out of the last 15 years. I think it was 10 out of the last 18. That he or 12 out of the last 18. That he owes close to $400 million, to Lord knows what. That surprise, surprise, he's not actually a billionaire. And then you have him fail to say no to white supremacy, to say bad to white supremacy. And then you have him contract coronavirus. You're like, God, it's been a tough, I think 2 weeks at that point for the president. And then you have him get in a vehicle with Secret Service agents to wave at his supporters. And I don't think this is the thing. I always say that I consider myself a Republican up until 2018. That's where I aligned a little bit more. Consider myself a Republican up until 2018. But I say that to say, I don't think that the president gave a damn that there were people out there standing for, I don't know how to word this without, I think that his ego is so huge and he's a narcissist and that he only cares about himself and that he didn't, he couldn't, he went on the joyride not to make the people happy, but to boost his own ego, to make himself happier, to feel loved because if, he won't be able to do virtual events because of the fact that he needs the crowd. He lives off of the crowd.
Damn right.
So he didn't do it for the people that were there. He did it for himself. He's not going home to show strength. He's going home because Joe Biden is out campaigning. I mean, hell, tonight, Joe Biden's going to Florida. Joe Biden on polls is leading by 5 points in Florida right now. You think this man wants to be in a hospital bed?
I mean, it is a valid question to ask, Damien. Florida, I want to talk about this. Mike Bloomberg made an extremely good impact on Florida. His money goes towards helping register more voters, especially since today is the voting deadline. I want to end on this, but I want to say it now as well. Please register to vote if you haven't already. I mean, if you're watching this podcast, 7 o'clock p.m., register to vote. Visit www.iwillvote.com and register to vote in your state and district. It's extremely important. This election is everything's on the line. Empathy's on the line. American values are on the line. So I just tell the American people who are listening to our podcast, go register to vote if you're able. And if you're not, register to be a poll worker. I'm a poll worker. Damien's a poll worker. I'm going to be. So it is incredibly important to be active in this election. But beyond that, I want to talk about the parallels between this event, him in his joyride, and him and holding up the Bible outside of, whatever church it was, the
The
president's
photo
church.
ops.
Photo ops, right? And there's immense parallels because the first one was risking American lives. The second one was also risking American lives in politically, you know, charged motives. They're both extremely, extremely similar to the point where many people don't understand that or actually consider it. But the fact of the matter is that as much as Trump drives off crowds, crowds just attract around Trump. The fact of the matter is that even after he went to the hospital, there was tons of super spreader events across America just to get together in crowds and support the president. I mean, these are places where nobody's wearing a mask. I posted a video of one of these events. This is thousands upon thousands of people not wearing a mask. Nobody there except them screaming and screaming for the president and risking their own lives in doing so, risking the lives of not only themselves, but other Americans they come into contact with only to support this regime. It is, I can't even begin to explain how ignorant it is, how cruel it is. It feels like thousands and thousands of Americans, I think 49%, 40% of Americans have lost their minds, but more importantly, they've lost their empathy. Because you can be stupid, you can be dumb as a nut, and have some kind of empathy. These Americans have lost their empathy, and that's what I'm scared about for this country. That's why I think this election is extremely important, because we have to restore more than the American education, American strength. We have to restore the American empathy, mm-hmm. because we're defined by being empathetic. We're defined by how we react to situations. We're defined by how we treat our peers. And this nation, 40% of people don't treat their peers right.
Yeah.
They sacrifice themselves and sacrifice their peers in doing so. But
yeah.
I want to talk about something that I think is pretty important, because I mean, we talked about this, Damien. Trump has been running his campaign on the idea that Biden hides in a basement, a bunker. Mm-hmm.
He's still running on that idea.
Now, I want to talk about the counter to this, which happened, I think, over the past couple of weeks, or last week, especially after the debate. Biden went on a huge bus tour across America, talking to in-person gatherings, talking to in-person events with his mask on, obviously. But it was socially distanced in-person gatherings with the American people, unions and workers. That's a 360-degree turnaround once again. And it just shows the versatility that the Biden campaign has when it comes to this election, because they played it right in the beginning. They can open up their kind of borders right now, and they can still go forward with their messaging because it's socially distanced. They have masks on. That's the best thing about it. Now, I was inspired. You know, it shows that while Trump is in a hospital, which obviously I am okay with saying that, because Trump caused that upon himself. He did everything. And he talked about this, Damien. I want to veer back to this for a couple of seconds here before I let you speak on this. The president has had a lot happen to him over the past couple of weeks, but every single thing that's happened arguably is because of him. He has led to his own destruction continually. So I wouldn't say it's bad luck. I would say it's President Trump hurting President Trump.
I've heard
and that's
that.
That's yeah. what the election has been really doing. But I want to hear your take on, first of all, what I said there, and also on Joe Biden returning to that big bus campaign while President Trump's in the hospital.
I've heard the bad luck thing. I don't know where this is coming from, right? It's just like, oh, it's unlucky. It's like not really, right? You wouldn't call it I'd say it's unlucky if Joe Biden right now got coronavirus because of the fact that he had a presidential debate and you know, the person across from him was not taking care of themselves. But that's exactly what it is. The person across from him was not taking care of themselves. So it's not unlucky. That's like me speeding and crashing and someone going, unlucky. Not really. I mean, I was doing something that was more than likely going to raise the chances of me crashing. I wouldn't necessarily call it unlucky. And that's what he was doing. He wasn't wearing a mask. He was hosting these super spreader events. So how can you call it unlucky, right? But, you know, on the topic of Joe Biden, it's the fact that he's dealing with it well, right? It's the fact that you do see this huge turnaround. And I don't understand. I mean, just how people are still criticizing him for staying inside of his basement, right? Or for hosting virtual events, or for not, you know, having you. They say he can't attract huge crowds. Do you really believe that? I mean,
he's done it before.
I just can't wrap my head around the idea that Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump himself believe that Joe Biden can't get a huge crowd, right? It's just astonishing to me. He doesn't do it because it's not the responsible thing to do. And what what I can't wrap my head around even more so is that they're saying that what Donald Trump was doing was showing grit and strength, that he wasn't afraid of the virus. If he wasn't afraid of the virus, why was he getting tested every day? Right? If he wasn't afraid of it, if he was really not going to be afraid of it, why wasn't he walking through the crowds and shaking their hands like he had done before? He wasn't afraid of giving it to someone. He was afraid of getting it. And there's a difference. He wasn't afraid of giving it to someone. In the case that he had it, he was afraid of getting it himself. That's some of the measures, only some of the measures that were taking place. I'd say the president was protected more so than any other individual inside of the White House. But even that would be kind of that would be even kind of a stretch, because of the fact that there's been reports of how the White House has dealt with the coronavirus throughout the entire pandemic. It's a circumstance that I still can't believe. You know, we were talking about the president. You know, he talks about I went to school, right? I went to school. It wasn't the read the book school. It was the school. Don't know what the hell that means. First of all, it wasn't the read the book school. It was the school. I think that he's trying to say that he has the experience of actually dealing with the pandemic. Would have been much easier to just say that he has the experience of dealing with the coronavirus instead of saying he went to school, not book school. But did he actually? Did he actually? Because what I still can't comprehend is the fact that he went on this joyride. Right, he went on this joyride, and then his aides and people like Rudy Giuliani, and his supporters are saying, well, the Secret Service agents are about 30 to 40 years old, so it's not really a big deal if they get it. How can you not understand that the issue isn't healthy people getting it? The issue is who those healthy people go home to. What if the Secret Service agent has a daughter with the compromised immune system? What if
that daughter has a teacher with a compromised immune system?
Exactly. You know, it's not about that person necessarily getting it. It's about who that person is going home to, who that person is going to school with, who that person is sitting next to in their class, who they ride the bus with. That's the issue. And I can't believe that we're, what, 8 months into this, Varun? Seven months, right? Let's say March. We're 7 months into this. And they still can't understand that the problem isn't the healthy people. The problem isn't necessarily the president getting the virus, but who the president is around and who those people go home to. It's crazy that they're so ignorant in saying that the Secret Service agents are going to be okay because they're 40 years old, and the survival rate for someone in their condition is 99.97.
Yeah.
That is, you know, so who's ignorant.
Well, you know whose survival rate is 99.9%? An obese man.
Yeah.
An obese man. Well, now it may be close to that because he has the best medical facilities, the best doctors that America can offer. And this is, you know what it is? It's socialized medicine, socialized healthcare. This is paid for by the American people. Mm-hmm. Think about it. Trump is the first
talk about
person.
Free healthcare, right?
Talk about socialized health. Talk about free healthcare. Trump's getting it right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Literally, he doesn't even pay taxes. He doesn't even pay taxes.
He hasn't, but he doesn't now.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I want to ask you about the Supreme Court, because I think that it's something that right now cannot be overstated. I think that it's something that's being ignored. Mm-hmm. However, last time we talked about the Supreme Court, it went a little rocky. But I want to talk to you about not only, I guess, when you're going to talk about the Supreme Court, you have to talk about Congress. I hear the stupidest thing, and I'm gonna let you answer my question with regards to the Supreme Court. But I want to say this. They made fun of Democratic states. The pandemic is the worst in the Democratic states. First of all, not true. The pandemic was the worst in Democratic states to begin with, but Democratic states also tend to be more heavily populated. But right. even with that fact, the pandemic is actually worse right now in Republican states. And it's ironic that Republicans still continue to say, the same Republicans that are continuing to say that, oh, it's worse in Democratic states. You know, isn't it a little weird that the only people with the coronavirus right now in the Senate, in Congress, in the White House are Republicans? That's odd, isn't it?
You know what I've heard?
They're making conspiracy theories. That's what I was gonna bring up. They're making Oh, it's the Democrats. What was the one that is? They sent him notes. They sent Trump letters, right? Kind of like how you do with anthrax. They sent Trump letters.
This is absolutely insane. You know what happened? I was on Twitter yesterday, and they're like, "Why are the Republicans getting the virus?" And I thought it was a joke, right? And I keep seeing it over and over again. And I'm like, "This is not a joke." People don't realize why Republicans are getting the virus. It's because they're not masked up.
Yeah.
They're not wearing a mask. Yep. And they're falling prey to that propaganda. I want to talk about this before I talk about the SCOTUS, because we have a couple of minutes here. Number one, when we're talking about the super spreader event held at Rose Garden, there was a Notre Dame, you know, the president of Notre Dame there, right? And the man wasn't wearing a mask the entire time. Now, this guy, as people on Pod Saves America mentioned, one of my favorite podcasts besides Bloodatine, they mentioned the fact that this guy would have worn a mask anywhere but that event. His students would have been ostracized by the university itself and quarantined for not wearing a mask there, but he goes out himself and doesn't wear a mask. Well, this guy has been an increasingly, you know, strong mask wearer. The only reason for why he didn't wear a mask there is because he was meeting with President Trump. And President Trump coerces people physically, forcefully, mentally to not wear a mask. This is the kind of guy who people are scared to wear a mask around. You know, he'll call you, you're wearing the biggest mask I've ever known.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
I don't know what it means. The American people don't know what that means.
The biggest
mask. He told a reporter this. He told him, you're trying to be politically correct. No, he's trying to stay safe. He's trying to keep you safe, Mr. President. He's trying to keep you safe. That's what he's trying to do. And, you know, what's surprising, Damien, is that it's been 8 months, 7 months since this virus has really taken hold of the country. And just now the CDC reported the virus can actually be transmitted by air. 7 months, 8 months for us to actually get confirmed what we've known all along. And speaking on the CDC, what's happened is that they offered the president and the White House the opportunity to get the best medical experts in the entire nation to track who got the virus from Trump. You know, the White House outbreak, they declined the offer. What does that mean? They're trying to suppress who got the outbreak, contact tracing. That's absolutely ignorant. Why would you decline? Who in the right mind would decline an investigation into that if you want to protect people? I wouldn't. You wouldn't. The American people wouldn't, unless you're crazy. And this is what that White House, this is what this administration really, really is. And I mean, when you're talking about Joe Biden, you've begun on that point, talking about Joe Biden having, small events and Trump bashing him for that. Well, the problem is that Joe Biden is 77 years old. Mm-hmm. His wife's pretty old. His family's pretty old. So if I was 77 years old, I'd be having small events, but more so if I was empathetic. As we know Joe Biden is, I would be holding small events. We know Joe Biden can attract crowds, Damien. We know he can because he's done it before. Before this whole pandemic, Joe Biden was attracting crowds like nobody else. He was doing it. He was doing it damn well. I mean, the Democrats voted for Joe Biden. Joe Biden didn't just come up here and start speaking. We as Democrats, the whole Democratic Party, me being a part of it, voted for Joe Biden. I didn't vote, obviously, but father did. But that is why he came up here. To say he has no influence, no crowds, that's absolutely ignorant of why Joe Biden's up on the stage in the first place. Yeah,
isn't it ironic though that Donald Trump makes fun of Joe Biden for these things. Obviously, it's ironic, but he makes fun of Joe Biden for not being able to attract crowds. Donald Trump attracted a pretty big crowd on the Rose Garden event. But isn't it ironic that the Rose Garden event celebrating his nomination to the Supreme Court might be the reason that she does not get put on the Supreme Court?
It's extremely ironic. And we're talking about crowding that event. We're also crowding hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
You're crowding hospitals. The more crowded your events are, the more crowded our hospitals are.
Yeah.
Because you have people going to the infirmary, the ER for the coronavirus, that pandemic. And I want to talk about something that we promised to talk about. We didn't talk about. I have been continually forgetting it. Before I kind of breeze over, I don't know if we have time for it, Damien, but I want to breeze over this to begin with. Trump just got released over 25 minutes ago. He just came back to the White House. And he came out and he waved. He put up a thumbs up to reporters, and they asked him, Trump, do you consider yourself a super spreader? He didn't answer the question. Mm-hmm. He did not answer the question. What does that say about the president of the United States of America? He doesn't know if he's a super spreader. I'd argue we know. We know he is a super spreader because Kayleigh McEnany. So many people have got it. And you know what happened? As of 2 minutes ago, he came back to the White House, took off his mask, and put it in his pocket, giving two thumbs up. I'm gonna end on that.
Wow. Man, I don't know. I just want to know what you think's going to happen with the Supreme Court nomination.
Okay.
What are the ramifications here? Because we have a Senate now that is missing a couple of Republican senators. And you have to have at least half of the Senate present, if I'm half of the Senate present, in order for a vote to even take place. So if you have two senators missing and all the Democrats refuse to show up, I think it's three senators. If you have three senators missing and all the Democrats refuse to show up, that's more than half of them missing. So Mitch McConnell has called to suspend all congressional activity for, or at least everything on the Senate floor for 2 weeks. That means that this nomination,
2 weeks.
obviously the hearings are still supposed to take place. I don't necessarily know what that's going to be, or what the ramifications of three missing senators are going to be for that. I think that it's actually the hearings in which half the people have to be present, and three of those people are going to be missing for the hearings, that they sit on the Senate's what's it called, where Lindsey Graham sits? What's he the head of the it's like the Supreme Court.
Nomination process,
Yeah,
whatever
yeah,
it
yeah,
is.
yeah. Something along the lines. I think it's one of them sits there. So if all the Democrats refuse to show up, then obviously that can't take place. And I don't think that they would take kindly to doing it virtually. I don't think that the Republicans would want to do it virtually because, I mean, again, it's Republicans. They were the ones that wanted to go back to the Senate, right? At least to in person on the Senate. So, what we're looking at now is the possibility of a Supreme Court justice being nominated 4 days before a presidential election, or a Supreme Court justice taking her seat 4 days before the presidential election, 4 days before the people's voice can be heard. Or maybe it doesn't happen. Maybe she, there's a possibility that theoretically tomorrow, right? I don't think that we're done with the Rose Garden event, with the Rose Garden super spreader event. That's probably, man. I'm gonna trademark that. I'm gonna need to get some the Rose Garden super spreader event. That's gonna go down
I
in
think it's already
history.
been trademarked, Damien. If it's
Damn.
not, we'll trademark
Yeah, there you
before.
go. We got it right after.
I think, you know who it's trademarked by? The
Who's
president.
maybe. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. But no, the Rose Garden super spreader event. Maybe he can use the money that he gets from it to pay taxes. But the Rose Garden Super Spreader event, I don't think that we've seen the last of who got infected or affected by it. I think that there might be God forbid, but there might be a couple more senators that come out positive. There might be a couple more individuals that are crucial to this nomination process that come out positive. So, this thing that they fought for, it's almost a, I'd call it. I'd call it a manifestation, right? It's almost God doing a little bit of a little magic, right? He's holding the Republicans to their word. He said, you guys weren't supposed to do this. You guys said you guys weren't going to nominate a Supreme Court justice in the last year of Donald Trump's first term. So if you guys aren't gonna stop it, I guess I have to stop it. So maybe we see a little bit of God's work. But I think that Republicans would oppose to that very strongly.
Well, I want to address what you said, Damien. I want to end on this because we don't have so much time left. I think we're over time. Right now, we got to release this episode to our viewers. So I apologize for the late episode. We're going to have a late episode today. But before that, I want to kind of introduce a topic for our next episode, hopefully, this SCOTUS discussion. I think the only way for them to have an actual vote, a running vote, with this whole virus situation going around, the White House being a super spreader territory going around, having more cases than New Zealand, for God's sake, the single most secure facility in the United States having more cases than New Zealand. I think we have to have remote voting for this to actually go through well. Because, I mean, they proposed it. I believe it's Rules Committee Chairman, was it McGovern? Yeah, Jim McGovern. He proposed it. He proposed some kind of research into remote voting. Or into designating different people to vote for you if you're at, in absentia as a representative or a senator. So that's an option they're willing to consider. Nancy Pelosi House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy worked to kind of work on this idea of having remote voting. So I think they're dawdling on it, but I don't think it's absolutely in the clear or negative. I think it's just in the middle there. But I think they have to have that. But also, what's going to be extremely interesting, Damian, is say she does get nominated, which is a high possibility at this point. I mean, it's even lower, but it's still high. It's going to be extremely interesting to see President, you know, if President Trump loses, if President Biden wins in November, this nomination hearing is taking place October 12th. Mm-hmm. Our president-elect will be a different guy than who nominated this Supreme Court justice. So it's going to be a very, very strong discussion, and we might see some votes change because of the fact that at this point, we might have a different president-elect. And that's hard. I think you want to nominate a Supreme Court justice. I mean, talk about 8 months before an election. And now you're talking about after the election. Literally, this is after the election. Obviously, Trump is still the president, but it's there after might be a new the Senate, election, though. November 3rd.
That could be the thing, right, though. There might that be a change. Completely new Senate.
Now, if it goes past October 12th, yeah, absolutely. I think they might have to, you know, work around the whole remote thing, work around the absences that they're going to have. But, I mean, this is going to be a hard process. I can't tell you definitively, but I think they have to work through remote voting because that's a possibility that they have to do that. I want to end on this because I've been dying to say it. For anybody who's watching our podcast right now, I know it's not a lot of people. People don't usually tune in to the last 60. Now we're at like 67 minutes or something. So it's not likely, but I want to say this. I'll say it again in the next episode too, because I believe so strongly in it. I believe in the fact that the White House, the most secure facility in the entire world, arguably, if the coronavirus could enter the White House in such profuse numbers, why can't it infect our schools, our businesses? How are we safe? How are we safe to reopen if it can enter the most secure and safe facility in the entire nation and possibly the entire world? I want to end on that. Ask yourselves that question. Have conversations about that question because it's an extremely important question if we're to move forward in this year with the COVID pandemic going on.
Yep. And just to reiterate, Donald Trump has entered the White House and will be receiving treatment in the White House. But ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning into another episode of Polititeen. Thank you, Varun, for joining me and adding to the wonderful discussion, as you always do. Be sure to tune in this Friday for another amazing episode. We have some crazy stuff coming up, some really big guests. We want to thank you guys for the insane support that we're receiving on all of our social media, you know, at Polititeen Show on both Instagram and Twitter. You know, check out our website, polititeenpodcast.com. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, thank you and goodbye.
Hello, 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 everybody. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Polititeen Podcast. If you enjoyed our conversation, head on over to www.patreon.com/Polititeen Podcast for more exclusive members-only content, special episodes, and merch drops. That is, once again, www.patreon.com/Polititeen Podcast. I'm going to make it a jingle when I grow up. It is www.patreon.com/Polititeen Podcast. No, I'm just kidding, you guys. But definitely visit www.polititeenpodcast.com. For more amazing content from myself, Damian, our team, our amazing artwork head, and our sponsors over at Polititeen. And once again, thank you so much for watching today's episode. Thank you to my co-host, Damian Galvin, for an amazing conversation, my friend. I do appreciate your input, as always. And that said, have a great rest of your weekend. Chime in for the next episode, and we hope you enjoyed today's conversation.